We want our customers to have the same experience, access to the same data, the same answers, regardless of how they engage with us, through the app, through the website, or by going to the store. They should have that consistent, accurate engagement with us.
Welcome to Technovation. I'm your host, Peter High. My guest today is Tilak Mandadi. Tilak is the Executive Vice President of Ventures and Chief Digital, Data, Analytics, and Technology Officer of CVS Health, an integrated health services company that earns roughly $355 billion in annual revenue. Tilak leads the company's data, digital, and technology strategy while overseeing growth and innovation through digital-led, customer-facing experiences and services. Previously, Tilak was the Chief Strategy Officer at MGM Resorts International, and prior to that, he was the Executive Vice President of Digital and Chief Technology Officer at Disney. And now for a word from our partner, Nile, and the company's co-founder and Chief Executive Officer, Pankaj Patel. Pankaj, talk a bit about the idea of network as a service, as this is a category you're pioneering, essentially.
Service is truly the new product. We really wanted to mold this in a way where AI truly drives the closed loop automation, because we saw this as a major hole in the way the networks were today. This is where we realized that data is the secret ingredient for what we are doing. Every facet of our life is dependent on connectivity and networking today. So we will say, before you design any piece of hardware, software, or firmware, ask yourself a question. Do you really need this? Focus on what is truly needed to deliver a service. After you have decided that you are going to need this, simplify it to the nth degree. Simplification is the key. After that, we said, let's automate everything that we are doing. Doing all of this, we were able to simplify and automate 95% of the usual things people encounter in the IT shop. You cannot do this with the product mindset. This is what we had to do in order to create the true service offering.
Thanks, Pankaj. And now on to our broadcast. Tilak, welcome to Technovation. It's great to speak with you today.
Great to be here, Peter, and thanks for having me.
That's a pleasure. Well, Tilak, I mentioned only briefly the scale of your organization, I believe the sixth largest in the Fortune 500. So a remarkable organization that has transformed itself into a health powerhouse. I wonder if you could take a brief moment and provide an overview of CVS Health's business as it currently stands.
Absolutely. As you said, Peter, we are a Fortune 6 company. I would start the answer with 200,000 highly dedicated colleagues in the company, serving over 100 million consumers. Out of that, by the way, 55 million of them are digital customers. Most people know CVS Health from the CVS pharmacy community locations. 85% of Americans live within 10 miles of a CVS pharmacy location. It's a huge reach for us. But in addition to those pharmacy locations, we have Caremark pharmacy benefits business, Aetna health benefits business, and then recently acquired Oak Street Clinics, Signify Home Health, and Minute Clinics. So with all these assets, we are playing a very essential role in transforming U.S. healthcare, in delivering better healthcare experiences and outcomes at a reduced and optimized cost. Essentially, a truly consumer-focused healthcare company in the U.S. and catering to the U.S. market only.
Thank you for that overview. Remarkable, again, your reach and the scale of your organization, and interesting also to hear about the many different parts of the business as well. I appreciate that overview, Tilak. I mentioned in the introduction that you're the Executive Vice President of Ventures and Chief Digital, Data, Analytics, and Technology Officer. I'd love to talk about your role in a couple different parts, as there's quite a bit there. I'd love to see your business card. It must be about a foot wide to accommodate all of that. Talk a bit about the innovation part of this, if you will, the ventures part of your role. What does that entail, and how does that contribute to the mission of the company?
Well, let me first start with apologizing for my title, which is quite unwieldy, and we should figure something out there.
There's an acronym somewhere, I think, Tilak.
There is no doubt. We have a CVS Health Ventures group By the way, I'm proud of that team, and it's led by a fantastic leader that's part of my leadership staff that I'm really, really impressed with them. The CVS Health Ventures, it allows us, Peter, to invest in emerging businesses in healthcare transformation. In many cases, technology-enabled, not always, but many cases, technology-enabled. These investments, they help us move our company strategies forward quickly. They keep us in the know of innovation and disruption that's happening in the industry. These investments allow us to stay ahead by being the first to market with new products and innovations. And also, they act as a source of potential M&A in the future. The thing that's very important is we are not passive investors. So we are not investing just for financial return. More often than not, we pick companies that support our company strategies directly, and we become their customers and co-development partners. So essentially, we play the role of investors and accelerators for those companies. And the companies that we invest in benefit immensely, not just from our financial investment, which is good, but because of the access to our huge enterprise capabilities, our expertise, scale, consumer touch points, and our use cases as a customer that help them grow their roadmap. In essence, we become a true anchor reference customer for these companies we invest in. We invest in companies of various stages of their growth. We invest directly, as well as in partnership with some specialized venture funds in the industry. We are managing a pretty large fund today, and we are very committed to continue to grow that fund.
You mentioned you invest directly at times in partnership with specialized VCs. I'm curious, how is the team structured and how does it, perhaps it is at times through those venture investors that you source the deals, but especially it sounds like many cases where that's not the case, how do you source the deals? How do you remain abreast of companies that are on the rise and potentially of interest? And as you say, those that have a nice fit to your strategy, where you are open to being an accelerator of sorts to those organizations?
That's a great question, Peter. One of the success criteria for corporate venture groups is having a team that knows how to do ventures, right? So we actually were very particular about creating this team of ventures professionals that both know our business quite well, the CVS business, but are very, very well networked into the ventures world, specifically in healthcare, but also in technology. So it all started with having the right team of people that are truly ventures professionals. They're not doing it as a part-time job. We maintain very strong relationships with a lot of people in the ventures industry, both in terms of investing with them, co-investing, but also because of the network, they refer deals to us. So, and we are, you know, one of the largest healthcare companies. So with that comes a lot of network as well. A lot of companies in healthcare in particular that are emerging would love to work with us. So they reach out directly as well. So multiple sources.
Makes sense. Let's talk about the other side of your responsibilities. You lead, as I noted, digital data analytics and technology. Can you talk a bit about the responsibilities there and some of the innovations your team is leading in those areas as well?
So before Karen Lynch, our CEO, hired me, we had a fairly federated technology landscape in the company. We had an IT function, a digital function, a data function, and an analytics function, and some AI functions. All those were quite federated. And I don't have to tell you the challenges of that particular structure. So Karen was very, very specific right from the beginning that part of my job is to bring all of that together and stop thinking about data, analytics, digital, and technology and maniacally think about customer experience, operational efficiency and excellence, growing the number of customers we serve. So think in those terms and become a product organization. So that's the journey we are on, to create a truly product organization that's focused on the things I just talked about. And each product organization has end-to-end responsibility for that particular product that cuts across traditional IT stuff, digital, data analytics, and so on. And we have certain enterprise functions that form the glue between each of these product groups as well. So that's how we are structured. We are very pleased with how the structure is coming along. And you asked, what are the innovations? Instead of listing everything we are working on, Peter, I just want to paint you a picture. You know, imagine a world of health around each customer where they don't have to wait in lines or be on a phone queue for anything. Imagine a world where you have a trusted partner in your health journey that's before, during, and after you need care. Imagine a world where you have full transparency into your medical costs and all the necessary support to get to the right cost. You don't want to spend more than you need to. Imagine a world where you have access to healthcare where you need it, when you need it, whether it's at home or in the right facility for you. And imagine a world where our own colleagues at CVS, we move away from having transactional conversations with customers, and we move to value-added interactions. And we are able to give our undivided attention, not distracted by administrative tasks, to the customer. So all the product innovations we are working on, they're all going towards achieving that world of health that I just talked about.
That's a remarkable vision. I really appreciate you noting that. And as you said, imagine a world where that's the case. Clearly, it's in process. What would you say about how far along you are with the goals, that those very ambitious goals, which clearly, as you noted before, have the customer at the center, thinking about what he or she needs, how they might interact with you as they wish to interact, as opposed to being dictated to, and so forth. And you also call out many of the frustrations, a lack of transparency, to take one of the factors that you just noted, of many that are addressing traditional frustrations people have with how healthcare is delivered in the U.S. How far along in the journey would you suggest you are at this point?
So as you rightly point out, Peter, it's a journey. And we are off to a really good start because we have, at CVS Health, we have that unique advantage of 85% of the Americans have a CVS pharmacy 10 miles in the 10-mile radius. So we have that direct relationship with the customer. So we know what's working for them, what's not working for them, what is that they would like to see. And we also get instant feedback, most of the time good, and sometimes it's a very constructive feedback. But we also get instant feedback. And that's a unique advantage for CVS Health. And as we construct our products, whether that is health benefit insurance products or pharmacy benefit products, that feedback loop puts us in a really, really good place. We recently announced, for transparency, just to take that as an example, true cost and cost vantage products. This is where we want people to know exactly what does a drug cost? What is the manufacturer cost of the drug? And what is that they are paying for it? We just want that entire transparency to be in place. And we announced it late last year. And so we are, both from a product perspective and from a commitment perspective, we are off to a good start. By the end of this year, we are going to launch a CVS Health app that is going to bring all the assets we have into that app as an integrated experience for the customer. not only for the customer themselves, but also for the caregivers in the family. We are more and more, we are seeing people sometimes become the chief medical officers for their family. They are taking care of kids. They are taking care of elderly relatives, parents. They are taking care of their siblings. And they want to have that overarching picture of the people they are taking care of and their needs. And the app that we are going to get out by the end of this year is going to allow them to do that in a completely transparent, seamless way. So we are off to a good start. We are making good progress, but I will admit that's a journey.
Fantastic. Thank you for that overview again, Tilak. You mentioned earlier, I believe it was 109 million customers and 55 million of them. These are not mutually exclusive, of course, I'm sure. 55 million interact with you digitally. So you mentioned the remarkable advantage you have of scale. 85% of the U.S. is within 10 miles of a store. 100% of them are presumably within access of you digitally, at least those that have access to the internet here in the U.S. Talk a bit about how you think about experience digitally and what you've learned from interacting with customers about how best to serve them through digital, your digital footprint.
We made a very firm commitment, Peter, to think omnichannel. So because of our physical footprint of the CVS pharmacies, the stores, and the digital footprint, we want our customers to have the same experience, access to the same data. They should get the same answers, regardless of how they engage with us, whether they engage with us through the app, through the website, through a chat, by calling the IVR, or by going to the store. Doesn't matter how they engage with us, they should have that consistent, accurate engagement with us. So we are very committed to the omni-channel experience. And that kind of drives the digital experience as well. So the digital experience ranges from pure digital experience on the app or web, where we recognize who the customer is and we personalize the experience across all aspects of healthcare, whether they are looking for getting their prescriptions filled, whether they are looking to schedule an appointment with a Oak Street Clinic provider, whether they are looking to get a vaccine, whether they are looking to actually buy stuff from the front store, like COVID kits. Doesn't matter what they are trying to do, we want that experience to be seamless in the digital world and accurate. That's very important. And with direct relationship to the physical footprint. So you can buy online and pick up at a store. You can go to the store and use the app, especially the app that's coming out by the end of the year, to do certain things like checkout, et cetera, in the store. So that's the kind of integration we are looking at. But the app is going to be the primary digital channel, because it is with the customer 100% of the time. And using some of the native capabilities, we feel we can engage with the customer a lot better in the app.
Well, that certainly makes sense. And I know actually, as a related topic, one that you're very passionate about is digital accessibility. And I know that it's work that you and your team are also influencing. Can you talk a bit about, first of all, a bit more about digital accessibility, but also the methods towards providing greater digital accessibility across your customers and would-be customers?
Equitable access to healthcare is a commitment from CVS Health. And part of that equitable access to healthcare is digital access to everybody. That's something that we focused on pretty explicitly from the design of our capabilities. So it's not an afterthought. We actually design our capabilities with accessibility as a core component. And we have a team of accessibility experts, Peter. Many of them have accessibility needs themselves. I sit with them and I'm blown away by the the tremendous creativity they bring and the passion they bring to make our digital assets completely accessible. We use a lot of industry standard tooling, but also we developed some breakthrough technologies for digital accessibility at CVS Health, and we made a conscious decision to open source them. We made those technologies available. I think last time I checked, we have 10 plus companies that are actively using the technologies that we have internally developed at CVS Health. So we are very proud of the work we are doing, but that's an ongoing work. We are will continue to use advanced technologies for AI, natural language processing, speech recognition. All those things will come into play as we enhance our accessibility.
Very interesting again, Tilak. Appreciate you sharing that perspective. I was also reflecting as I looked across your many experiences that all at least of the past several stops have been either primarily or exclusively B2C companies. And one of the great advantages, of course, of working for a B2C is you can be the customer. So with CVS Health or MGM Resorts or Disney, even at Amex, where you were an executive as well, which has both B2B and B2C, needless to say, but significant B2C aspects to what that organization does as well. Talk a bit about how you think about yourself as a consumer, in this case to CVS Health, as a means to gain insight to customer experience and potential ideas or to test hypotheses you and the team might have and the like.
One of the things that I'm incredibly grateful for was the opportunity to work at Disney. And prior to that, the opportunity to work at American Express. Working at Disney and at American Express before coming to CSL, one of the things you learn is the criticality of experience. Product functionality and the IP, that's incredibly important, right? The capability is really important. But the way your consumer experiences that product is often equally or more important than the product itself. So that's a great learning as I work through my career is how do you design this experience? How do you think like a consumer and balance asking the consumer, what do they want to see, and creatively thinking through what are those experiences the consumer is not even thinking about, and bringing that together. That's the way to differentiate. That's the way to win. That's the way to gain loyalty. And that's the way to, frankly, create an enjoyable and beneficial engagement with the consumer. So learn a lot about how to engage consumers before, during, and after product development. Learn and from people that know a lot better about that than me. I'm so grateful about the teams at Disney and everywhere else. Learned a ton about acknowledging the mistakes pretty quickly. You're not going to get everything right, right at the beginning. Having that feedback loop and acknowledging and learning if something went wrong and pretty quickly correcting yourself would be incredibly important. And last but not least, completely ignore the organizational structure of the company you are working for. That is by far the worst hurdle to creating experience. Customer is not interested in how we are structured or how our businesses and the P&L groups are organized and how we think of our products. They don't care. They care about what is my need. What is my experience? So the approach that I always take and I ask my teams to take is start with experience first. So that should be the number one thing you do when you start defining a product. What's the experience? And then define what are the operating processes necessary to support that experience? And then think about the technology necessary to make all that happen. So that's kind of the hierarchy of the way to do it.
I really like that. Very, very interesting. One thinks of a number of cable companies and telecom companies where that you can actually see the org structure in terms of how you engage with them. And it can lead to some frustrations for not mentioning any names, of course, at all. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, one of the biggest frustrations for people as a consumer, Peter, I'm sure you have, you're on the phone and the person tells you, well, that's not my department, let me transfer you. No, 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 I don't care, right? Just help me, I am your consumer, you are one company, right? That's what the experience-first design really takes into consideration.
Yeah, that's really interesting. I'm curious, especially given the remarkable scale and the great overview you gave at the outset of our conversation as to the many businesses that you're in, how do you foster that? You mentioned prior to your arrival, the organization, especially that which you now own, was very federated. Presumably, though, please correct me if I'm wrong, Talak, a reflection of how the business itself was rather federated. And so as you're in, and I'm sure, again, it's a journey as with past parts of our conversation today, but as you think about fostering and forging a pathway towards a one company mentality surrounding the customer and thinking again about his or her experience above how you might organize yourself, what are some of the things that you are doing to ensure the organization fits that model?
Companies swing between the extremes, right? Often. I don't want to generalize, but often, oh, we need to centralize. Oh, no, that's not working. Let's just spread everything out, you know, like let people do what they want to do in constituent businesses. Somebody that used to work for me at Disney introduced me to this notion of dynamic equilibrium. There is a nice balance you can get to that helps you to get the agility, responsiveness of being embedded into the constituent businesses, but also the efficiencies, the standardization of being centralized, of getting rid of silos, of being centralized. And there is a way to do that. And the way we are doing that, and this is the way I've done it at Disney, and the way I'm doing at CVS is that we are one group, the digital data analytics technology, all of that came together into one group. We are structuring ourselves based on products. And we have identified products that are business unit specific, and we have identified products that are enterprise-wide, that are shared across the enterprise. So we have enterprise teams that work on enterprise products, business unit specific teams that work on business unit specific products, but they all sit together. And the business unit teams are truly embedded into the business units. The leader of the business unit team sits on the leadership team of the president of the business unit. So there is no sunlight between them. But on the same day, they need to turn around and be a senior leader of the centralized DDAT organization. So they have they wear two hats. So this product orientation and having that balance between business unit specific and enterprise-wide teams, all using enterprise architecture and standardized tool sets, all of that gives us the ability to operate very efficiently. I would be lying if I tell you this is just smooth sailing. That's never the case when you are moving from a federated set of groups to this equilibrium balanced group. You have to bring people along, make sure their concerns are addressed. And we are doing that. That journey is underway.
I really like how that product model helps foster that, bringing together people from across the traditional silos to work in collaboration, especially as you point out where the products are those enterprise products and doing the work of bringing those people together to add value across the organization, again, with the customer in mind.
The other thing that helps a great deal is the experience first mindset. So every time we have a conversation about a particular business unit wanting a product, we talk about, well, how does the consumer of CVS Health experience this product? And very quickly, people would come to a realization, oh, we need to do that across the businesses. We cannot just do it here.
Yeah, that's really great. I wanted to ask you, Talak, as you look to the future, what are some of the things that excite you, trends that excite you, business trends, technology trends, however you choose to interpret that? What are some things that are making their way either into your mind or onto your roadmap, as the case may be?
I'll start with a more generic answer. Peter, I started my journey my professional journey in 1990 as a technology consultant. We had a lot of really interesting ideas on what we wanted to do at that time, only very quickly to realize we can't do much of that because the computing power was simply not there in 1990. I am so incredibly jealous of the technologists that are now coming of age at this moment. The computing power, the tools, the technologies that are at their fingertips, I am blown away. And it's just a wonderful time to be a technologist. Our ability to do things is only limited by our imagination at this point, not by computing power or tech. And that's a great place to be. That I would just say this is a golden time to be a technologist. It's also a really great time to be in healthcare. Historically, healthcare has not been at the forefront of technology-led innovation or transformation. It's a fairly resistant to technology-led innovation and transformation, not focused on the consumer experience, as we talked about. But a wonderful thing is happening in healthcare. And it's happening because of regulatory changes. The government is asking for certain things. It's happening because of consumer expectations. Consumers are now living in a great experience digital world for a majority of their life. And then they come to healthcare. They are not accepting the status quo in the healthcare. And there is competition within healthcare is also driving innovation. And all those things coming together, and I think we are truly at the beginning stages of a huge technology-led innovation and transformation of healthcare. So it's great to be in healthcare, great to be a technologist, and hence my pitch to people watching this, consider CVS Health for Employment because it's great to be a healthcare technologist at this point. We are hiring. You asked about trends. I think responsible AI is real, is true, and is going to transform the world and I use the word responsible AI very explicitly. Gen AI, general AI, whatever you want to talk about, applied responsibly has the ability to change the world. And I think we'll see that in the next 10 years, the world is going to change. Remember I talked about, imagine this world of healthcare. I think responsible AI is going to play a pretty important role in that. And by the way, at CVS Health, we have a very simple principle for AI. We intend to use responsible AI to enhance the human connection that CVS Health is trusted and known for, and minimize human errors. That's the bottom line. I see that as an augmentative technology to enhance the human touch, to move away from transactions and move to interactions, as we talked about earlier. The other trends, I believe, and I'm probably going to sound a little archaic in this. I actually believe in the metaverse. I am a huge believer in physical and digital virtual worlds coming together and creating this incredible seamless experience for consumers. I believed in it when I was at Disney. I actually talked about that, about theme park metaverse. I truly believe that it's going to permeate the rest of the industries as well. So I am probably an outlier, but I'm a big believer on the physical digital convergence. I think that's going to get even better with AI. I am astonished with the biotech innovation. I think that's going to change the world. And there are things like quantum computing. I think we'll see some real world-changing things come out of those trends as well. And last but not least, I think technology is going to evolve to where the software developers, us, we no longer need to worry about the nitty-gritty we can actually focus on creating experiences, creating products. And a lot of nitty-gritty we need to worry about today would be taken care of automatically. I think that's going to happen before we know it.
A great list of topics on the rise, and very interesting to hear about the reasons for your enthusiasm in each of those, and even a couple that are perhaps a bit counterintuitive or against the grain. Great to hear some of the things that at least first come to mind as you contemplate consequential trends for the future. Talak, I wanted to ask you in closing to reflect, if you wouldn't mind, as somebody who's had major roles across many now major scaled organizations, industry leaders of various kinds, what do you attribute your success to? What have been some of the difference makers along the course of your career that have helped propel you to the heights you've reached?
I think the answer to your question depends on how we define success. So I never particularly looked at my roles or any of that as a particular criteria for success or not. You know, I had highs and lows in both personal life and professional life. And the things that I always thought are important is, are you adding value? Are you being productive? And are you helping people along the way in every which way? Bring people along. Whether that is, you know, there were people early on in my career that took me under their wing for reasons I still don't know why. And I'm so grateful for that. And I would like to pay forward. And that's something that's really important. To answer your question more specifically, just in terms of getting work done, I am a very strong believer in being micro-informed, but not be a micromanager. Yet another controversial comment. I never understood, if you don't understand the details, how can you manage? I don't get that. So I think leaders should know the details, but stay away from micromanaging. And I've been very particular about that. And the other thing that I think helped me along the way is never care to be the smartest person in the room. I first of all, I know I'm not the smartest person in any room. And I made it a practice to be surrounded by people that are a lot smarter than me, whether that's my team, my bosses, or colleague, and my peer group. And I was very curious. I learned a ton from them. I always very curious, never hesitated in a meeting to ask, I don't understand it. Can you explain to me? Never cared how that sounds, any of that. Just stayed very curious. And you talked about, I took a lot of different roles. One of the things that really helped me as I moved across industries and moved across companies and roles was a simple principle of learn to walk the fine line between getting assimilated and getting rejected. That was a pretty tough thing to do. But if you are rejected by the body, you can't really, however good your ideas are, you can't really do anything. But you are assimilated, you start doing crowd thinking, you are not really bringing any value either. So how do you find that balance between the two and bring people along? That's probably the, if I have to tell you one thing that helped me a lot, was that, trying to figure out, you know, being able to figure out that balance. I know that's a long answer, but that's how I think about it.
That's a profound answer. I really appreciate the number of things you noted there of consequence. I'd love to double click on that last point just for a moment longer, if I may, of learning to walk the fine line between getting assimilated and getting rejected. That is a tricky one. And, you know, I really like the way you frame that, the necessity to call into question shibboleths, but also making sure you're doing so in a way that's not going to, frankly, get you fired or have people ignoring you, at least as a intermediate step on the way to getting fired. How did you walk that line? How did you recognize when you were starting to cross it to the point where it might be an issue? Are there, it strikes me that the part of the answer might be a balance between IQ and EQ, and making sure that you are understanding the motivations of the rest of the team, of treating them with respect and so on. But talk a bit about how you tested that and got on were able to remain on the balance beam to ensure you were not falling in either direction.
There are some very simple techniques that I used. I know you probably are expecting a very profound answer, but very simple techniques. A boss of mine told me a while ago, Peter, when I first joined the company, I asked for advice. And they said, well, Tilak, always remember, this company has been here for 150 years before you got here, and most likely would be here for another 150 years after you leave. So just keep that in mind, that you are a caretaker while you are here, and leave it in a better place. But be respectful of the people that have carried the weight before you, and then what you are leaving for the people that are going to come after you. And that always stayed with me. So I approach with respect for people that were there before. And I'm completely vocal about it. I express it. I thank them profusely. I truly and sincerely respectful of the work they have done. And I'm very clear about anything I want to do would be built on top of their shoulders, what they have done. And being explicit about that and making them part of the future right from the beginning would be incredibly important. And that goes a long way. And the other thing that I do is I ask people how I am doing. A very simple ask of, hey guys, did I explain that? Did I come across okay? Are you on board? Is there something I should do differently? Just that simple approach of just asking for feedback, and feedback is a gift, that would give you both the feedback if you're crossing the line, but also an incredible amount of goodwill. And last but not least, being very transparent about not having any other agenda other than what you are talking about, you know, what the product you are trying to build. There is nothing behind it. I'm not trying to get a promotion. I'm not trying to, it's just a product we are trying to build. And this product is important because of these reasons. Being very explicit, clear, and transparent about what is behind what you are pitching, I think is incredibly important as well. So people don't have to speculate. Where is this coming from? Just be pretty honest about where it is coming from. So things of that nature. But look, I don't want to portray. I cross the line sometimes. I have to pull myself back and I have scars to show for it. But I always learn from it and try to get better.
Well, Tilak Mandadi, thank you so much for a thoughtful and thought-provoking conversation about the remarkable transformation you're leading at CBS Health and your thoughts more generally from across your remarkable career. I'm grateful for your time and for all you shared.
Thank you, Peter. Thanks for the opportunity to speak with you.